Aaron.
Doing? Can you see me? I can't really see you. There's a microphone in my face. It's nice to see you. I'm going to try to shorten my talk and I'll still allow room for questions at the end. Hi, everybody. If you don't know me, my name is Becky Stern. I'm the director of wearable electronics at Adafruit Industries, a DIY electronics kit company here in New York City. It's okay? And we make parts and sensor breakouts and tutorials and source code for makers and hackers to build their own technology and mod the stuff they already have. But my passion is combining electronics and crafts to make unexpected, useful, self-expressive, and mischievous wearable electronics. You good there? Okay. But in addition to making stuff with electronics, I'm no stranger to using fashion as a hacking tool for culture. This is a project I volunteered on called Wall Suits, where we brought a whole bunch of donated business suits for men and women to Zuccotti Park for the Occupy Wall Street protesters, and we offered haircuts and a changing booth to transform their look so that their appearance might be more palatable to those they wished to affect, so their message would be more likely to be heard. And there's me down in the corner there at the pants hemming station. So to me, the definition of disruptive wearable technology is the application of science that disturbs or interrupts an activity. I'm not so much talking about the definition of disruptive that means like groundbreaking, or innovative, because obviously most of these things will already do that, but the ones that interrupt or disturb. They can, disruptive wearable tech can solve some problems, probably by creating some problems. If you took the subway here, maybe something like this could have helped you. And the projects I'm going to share with you today cover like the last 10 years of creative use of technology that impacts culture, things that you wear on your person. This is the creative misuse of some anti-bird technology from the garden store implemented by a student in Singapore named Suming Cheng. I think that wearables have the potential to inspire us, protect us, express ourselves, and give us real-life superpowers. And a lot of that hacking the body culture comes from our favorite place, MIT. Up here we've got Steve Mann with, some people call him, whether you agree with it or not, the grandfather of Google Glass, Leah Beakley, the inventor of the lily pad Arduino, Aya Badir, founder of Little Bits, and my boss, Lamore Fried, who, in her spare time likes to make cell phone jammers. There's other places, a lot of academic places, but I think the main place a lot of this culture comes from is MIT. NYU's Interactive Telecommunications Program, lately when I went through my slides, was like, wow, there's a lot represented there. And so we'll just dive right in. I'm going to show you a bunch of projects. And they're more or less in chronological order. We'll go take it back to 2005 from the old Afrotech mod site. Raise your hand if you're a big fan. Yeah. I had to fetch this from archive.org because the site's a lot different now. These are the Pika shoes. They have an ion generator in the sole of the shoe, and it helps you build up a static charge so that you can shock people by touching them. And they're not very, we're going to go through and see maybe things get a little bit more fashionable, and I'll talk about fashion at the end, but these are definitely mischievous, right? And they're useful, and they give you that superpower, like Pikachu. It's hard to get these parts. I've been told it's hard to get the ion generators now, so that's one reason you can't build this project yourself right now. But it is a how-to guide. This is Random Search by Aya Badir. It's her thesis project from MIT, and it's an undergarment that records the location and pressure of the way you're touched during a secondary screening at the airport. And she did a lot of research to make this garment undetectable by X-ray so that she could wear it through the airport and not be secondarily screened because of the project, but rather. So she used those are conductive Velcro up there, and then these are the fabric sensors that she did to test there. Here I have a little video. Oh, sorry. We'll play the video. Oh, teaser. So, as a Middle Eastern woman, she felt extra targeted and then powerless to complain if someone touched her inappropriately. And she was secondary screened, all the time. And so this garment gives her the power to track that misconduct. So you'll see that's a theme going through, that we have wearable electronics and technology can make us feel powerful. Here she is proving that it doesn't go off in the metal detector. Let's go ahead. So this is one of two projects of my own that I put in, that I managed to weasel into my slideshow. This is the laptop CompuBody sock. Maybe you've seen it before and you didn't know I made it. Well, because it's popular on the internet, but I made this. I knit it with my own two knitting needles. It was made, I made it as a sculpture, an art piece. I was in grad school, and I wanted to sort of highlight the attention space that you have when you're using the computer, like nothing else matters. And but the fun thing about art is that the meaning is whatever the viewer decides it is, right? And I'm big into that. Like, if whatever your interpretation of is art. So if you feel like you don't get art, you go to the museum. It's whatever you think it's about. And it's the artist's job to sort of, like, raise questions that make you get gears moving in your head. And that means that once it's out there in the world, on the internet, like, commentary happens, you know? Like, I didn't think it was for porn, but I guess that's what it's for. But really, when I made it, I wanted to, my fingers were cold when I was typing, and I wanted to make a keyboard cozy, and then I just, like, couldn't stop knitting. I read an article, actually, that Edward Snowden uses something like this, like a big red hoodie to, like, cover his computer, because then you can't see typing or, like, what's on your screen. This is my old roommate, who's such a good sport. We took a trip to Maker Faire, and he modeled for me on the airplane. This next project is the iWriter. It's by members of Free Art and Technology, or FAT. I'm also a member of that group, but I didn't work on this project, so it doesn't count as mine. Yeah, FAT love. And it's the iWriter is a pair of eye-tracking glasses that let this paralyzed graffiti artist draw again. And that's, I think it's really powerful, and it's made with DIY tech, low-cost, stupid camera, IR LEDs, cheap plastic glasses. And I have a little video about that. Oh, I didn't bring sound. We didn't bring sound with me. I forgot to tell them that I need sound. This is okay. It doesn't need sound because it's just music. You can hear it? It's just music. It's just, oh, because of the microphone. It's just music. It gives me a little break. Okay, so you get it, right? So what they did then is they took his drawings and they used a giant projector to, like, live project his drawing onto a building. And then they had, like, a video check going back to his hospital room so he could see his tags go up on a building for the first time since he was diagnosed with, or, you know, since he became paralyzed by his ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. So I think that's super powerful, right? This wearable, this low-cost DIY tutorialized wearable technology has the power to improve the quality of life as we all live longer and our physical bodies fail us. And that how-to guide makes it so that anybody can hack or extend or use this for their own purposes. This is the second of my own projects. I promise it's the last one. And it's the TV Be Gone jacket. So many of you guys probably know what the TV Be Gone is. It's a small electronic device that turns off all of the televisions. It's just a simple infrared remote. It was invented by Mitch Altman, who's here downstairs teaching an Arduino workshop right now. And you know, he teaches all over the world. And then also the kit was co-made by my boss, Lamora Fried, who's in the front row. And the kit, you put it together, it's a little handheld remote, right? And I would bring it, I was in grad school in Arizona, and there were TVs in every restaurant. And I don't just mean, like, just the chain restaurants, every restaurant. And I'm not talking about using this at a sports bar, but, you know, I'd go out to eat and be bombarded by pixels. And like many people with ADD, I have trouble focusing on who's with me if there's, like, a lit screen in the room. So I would turn it off all the time, but, like, the wait staff would be like, what are you doing? And they'd see the TV turn off and they'd go and turn it back on, or they'd ask me not to eat there. That actually never happened. I never got kicked out for TV Be Gone-ing. But I wanted to make it more stealth, and I didn't want to have these awkward interactions. And, you know, if I, like, people weren't usually watching it, so if I could get it to be off, they wouldn't notice it was off until after I left. So I sewed it into the lapel of my sweatshirt and had the infrared LEDs pointing out the front. And infrared light is invisible to the human eye, so it just looks like rhinestones or whatever other studs you've got on your jacket. And then the battery's in the pocket, and then I used conductive thread to connect to the zipper. And that acted as the switch. So when I would just come into a restaurant, I could just unzip my jacket, hang out for a little bit. The device would be like, Sony off, Samsung off, Panasonic off. And it would get to the code of those TVs. They'd turn off, I'd remove my jacket, and enjoy my meal. I liked it so much, I made it again into this black jacket, you see. And I want all my jackets to be like this. And you can do that. There's a lot of wearable tech now that, like, they want you to try to wear this one thing all the time. And that's because it's still kind of expensive. But really, like, you don't wear the same thing all the time. You wear different jackets. And the TV Be Gone is inexpensive enough that you could put it in all your jackets. There's a tutorial online. It also gives you that stealth superpower, right? And scratches the mischievous itch. This is the Anti-Paparazzi Clutch by Adam Harvey. He might be here. Hey, if you're here. And I'm sharing a lot of his projects today. And what it does is it talk about giving agency over your physical space. This is for celebrities or other people who don't want their flash picture taken. It has a high-powered LED and a sensor to react to camera flashes, kind of like a slave flash if you're into photography. And it'll flash back and kind of obliterate your face. So you can kind of hold your purse up to your face and then make those images unusable by the very real, like, physical. You know, paparazzi photographers are often quite aggressive. And, you know, like, this isn't a DIY project. He doesn't offer instructions. In fact, you can't even really see what it's made out of in these pictures, right? You can't even see that it's a purse. And while I wish he'd make more tutorials, I do think that this has a huge cultural impact because it creates celebrity appeal, right? And we worship celebrities. And even if we don't worship celebrities, the things that are appealing to them are forced into our daily lives all the time through media. And I think that's important because it makes people see that fighting tech with tech is an option. And they might be inspired to try that themselves. If you went to Greg Horton's surveillance talk yesterday, this is the only slide we have in common. This is the CV Dazzle, which is Adam Harvey's ITP thesis project. It's hair and makeup that makes you undetectable to facial recognition software. So you get surveilled, and then that footage gets put through some facial recognition software to sort of identify the people, match them up to certain time steps, match them up to a different database to identify who they are, like establish continuity when there's multiple security cameras in a space. They can use facial recognition software to say, like, oh, okay, then he went to camera four. It uses, like, the bridge of your nose and the position of your eyes, the symmetricality of your symmetry of your face to detect whether or not you're a face or not a face. And so he found out that if you styled your hair in a certain way and you put asymmetrical makeup on, that your face can't be detected by the facial recognition software. This is the top picture, is an op-ed that they did in the New York Times about his work. I think that it's really interesting because this stuff that blocks your facial recognition, it looks a lot like this, right? And this is just personal expression. So, like, if this could be, like, if you saw someone wearing this down the street, you might think that they're just like this. But maybe they're, like, trying to hide from surveillance cameras. And I think it's really cool that that there's an invisibility to it, even though it's, of course, very visible. It could pass for something that's culturally, like, okay right now, which I think is really neat. And finally, you know, I can get that, like, bridge of the nose piercing and explain to my mom that, like, no, it's cool. Like, just put a feather in it, and then, like, the cameras can't see me, Mom. That's why I got it. It's my next one, my next facial piercing. This is the no-contact jacket, and there's a video. It also has sound, but the sound's not that important. So this is created by Adam Witten and Yolita Nugent, and it's obviously a prototype. I don't think it ever made to market. A lot of these things, that if they try to make businesses out of it, like this, would probably investors would see huge liability, I'm sure. But it's got that inspirational thing, right? And it gives you a superpower, makes you feel powerful in an otherwise powerless situation. Because, you know, if you have, like, this problem with stun guns and pepper spray, you have to be able to wield it at the right moment, right? So this kind of, like, gives you a sense of security when you feel vulnerable. This is the emergency amulet by Kiveli Venzani, who's also an NYU ITP student. And it calls 911 when you break the glass vial. Similar to the previous one, it helps you call for help. And feel like you've got this physical representation of something safe. People often wear, like, a cross around their neck, right? I'm not one of those people, but, like, it gives you... People wear things that have symbolic meaning to them, and this has a symbolic meaning that, like, if you ever needed it, it could help you out. So now we get into anti-surveillance. This is the CCD Me Not umbrella by Mark Shepard. And security cameras, the software they run the images through, they're looking for faces, but they're also looking for people, right? Like they don't want to bookmark video points that's just birds. They want to see, like, if there's a person coming and going, getting unauthorized access to some place. So what this project does is it helps you obfuscate your human form and transform your silhouette on that security camera while also blotting out your face. Again, infrared light's invisible to the human eye, so this is what it looks like in, you know, to you on the left, and this is what it looks like to a security camera on the right. And here's another image of it from a security camera on the left there. And you can see how it totally, while it doesn't completely overwhelm the camera the same way that the flashy purse does, It does change the human silhouette, which might fool the software into not thinking it's a human and thinking it's just a bird or a car or something else they're not looking for. There have been experiments with headbands with infrared LEDs, and boy, I really wish this worked. I really wish it did. I want to tell you that it works, but I'm going to show you a video that proves that it kind of doesn't. That's why the umbrella is a really better idea. This is Randy Serafan, a good friend of mine and member of FatLab as well, experimenting with infrared LEDs. There is no audio on this video, except at the end. He really wanted it to work, too. You can see in his face, he's like, oh, man, this one, too. So it's not reliable, right? And the title of his blog post is, I included it for your amusement, "Wouldn't Bet My Life on It." And that's an interesting point, because these, like, these security ones, like the necklace, right? I don't know that I'd bet my life on it.
Yeah, they're on. This is just some dye. If the video was better.
So it doesn't work, right? It doesn't work. But what might work for your, like, along with the umbrella, Greg brought up an interesting point yesterday somebody asked a question in Greg's talk yesterday about, hiding the way you walk. So, you could use the umbrella to hide that you're a human form, but you should also maybe try to obfuscate your walk, and it made me think of this Monty Python sketch. I mean, it's a funny sketch, and, you know, it's from before we were talking about, it's definitely not anti-surveillance in mind, but it could work if you had the umbrella and the Ministry of Silly Walks, like, you're invisible to security cameras. Here's another Adam Harvey project, more recent one called Stealthware, and it's garments that hide your midwave infrared or your heat signature from surveillance drones, not cameras. We're not talking about, you know, privacy of our identities, but sort of privacy that could protect our lives from a state-controlled threat. And that's why you see it sort of like, you see the burkas there because of the, oh, well, sound, thanks. That'll come in handy. We have to do one video at the end that has sound, so that's nice. And so, you know, it's culturally... It's like culturally, you know, he's trying to be culturally sensitive. Try to put it in perspective, like make you understand where it's supposed to be used. And we do realize that if thermal emissions are blocked, your body will overheat pretty quickly. So it might not be suitable for like wearing for a long time and in all climates. But like maybe you need to go to the store. You can see here the figure in the center of the frame is wearing the burqa, and you can only see the heat signature on the legs. So quite effective for short periods of time. This is a collection called Wearable Solar by a fashion designer named Pauline van Dongen. She's Dutch. And I don't know that it's just, it's not mischievous, it's not really devious in the way that some of these other projects are, but I think that presenting the idea of carrying your own energy source as a fashion and desirable and like it might even be sexy is pretty powerful, and we haven't really seen a lot of that yet, and I think we'll be seeing a lot more of it soon. I don't know that I would wear a black jacket out in the sun, never mind long enough to charge my phone. But the fashionable presentation here is what's key, because it's culturally relevant. You're seeing that it's not just hackers and nerds. Like this is real fancy fashion. You can tell by her eyebrows. This is the CHBL jammer coat by Coop Himmelblau, which is an Austrian architecture and design studio. And it's created for an exhibition, and it is a commentary on data privacy. It's made with conductive fabrics that block cell phone, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth signals, so that you can be sure that when your phone is off, your location is not actually being tracked, that none of your devices are being broken into. And it's a nice snuggly coat that keeps you safe from those scary data thieves. And here's another line of cell phone blocking clothes designed by Kunihiko Morinaga. And you'd think it's also a commentary on data privacy, but it's I'm all about EMF blocking fashion. It was actually an advertisement or stint by Trident Gum, who thought that like if you spend all this time on your phone, you don't spend time interacting with your fellow people, and during that time when you're interacting with fellow people, you might be more likely to chew gum. And I mean, I love the idea that the shiny aesthetic could become popular because it represents data privacy. So like, because it's hard to make conductive fabrics not shiny and still do the job. So maybe material science is going to get there, but for now, like, I love that. I'm wearing shiny clothes because data privacy. And I think that this type of thing is a palatable entry point for a lot of people who might even be not ready for this, to understand what this means. But they get this. They're like, I wear pants, I wear shirts, I wear dresses, although I don't see any pockets on this dress for your cell phone. And likewise, these are cell phone blocking pockets, and there are a lot of them, both DIY guides. I did a DIY guide. Aaron Barthol in Germany did a DIY guide. Adam Harvey did the off pocket. Before data privacy was the hot button issue, it was about cell phones, which are also a transformative and disruptive wearable technology, transforming our culture and interrupting it in a way we didn't anticipate. So those are the two things, right? Like protect your privacy of your data and counteract the social interruption with an overt gesture. Like this one on the lower right, it says my phone is off for you. And so I can imagine, you know, you right before you sit down to dinner with your date and you wrap your phone in the handkerchief and you set it on the table, and that, you know, that like really makes it clear that you're interested in whatever dumb thing your date's cat's been doing. So while these things can protect against data privacy and or protect your privacy of your data and make you feel like you're not being tracked or your camera's not filming you, and do this social gesture of like I'm paying attention to you, I'm not paying attention to my phone, I think that in the future there's going to be a more imminent security threat with this kind of more imminent need to block out signals from your body, not just from your phone. And that's because I watched this really creepy video from Stanford where they're researching midfield wireless energy transfer. So, like, you know how inductive charging, you can inductively charge your phone. It has to be really close. They're working on extending that distance a couple inches so that medical implants can be made a lot smaller and put the large, bulky battery on the outside of your body. And the video talks about how they can potentially cure Parkinson's or chronic pain by like putting these little implants on your nerves, place or in your brain, places that were much too tight to put any implants or make implants before because they had these big bulky batteries. So I'm a little nervous that you might need one of these coats to prevent someone from like hacking, like, you know, creatively misusing your body implants in the future. Because if you are known to have one of these and someone wants to mess with you, they could probably like hurt you pretty bad if they created a device that used that mid-range wireless energy transfer to do something not so nice. Did you guys read Diamond Age by Neal Stephenson, science fiction book? They're all about nanotech, and there's these nanobots, and like when you get convicted of a crime, they inject these nanobots into your bloodstream, and there's no fence on the prison. It's just that if you walk too far out beyond the beacons, all the nanobots explode at once. So, like, could that jacket help you escape from that prison? Or similarly, you know, fight back against the man? Here's my video that needs sound, so that came just in time. I've been told I'm supposed to keep it at 3/4.
You may have heard this statistic in the news at some point. Every 26.2 seconds, a violent assault occurs in the United States. But did you know that almost half of those assaults go undocumented? And many documented cases are simply unprosecutable? Violent assault can happen anytime, anywhere. And no matter how prepared you think you are, effectively responding requires you to anticipate your attack. That's near impossible. So attackers go free. Emergency response times are long, and rarely is there evidence collected that can actually be used to close such a terrible chapter in someone's life. The good news is, this is about to make it possible for violent assaults to be documented. Looks like a hair clip, right? Well, look closer. What you don't see is a tiny high-tech sensor that is only triggered by the forces that create injuries. A Bluetooth signal emitting from the sensor that instantly turns on your smartphone microphone and camera. An app that immediately starts transmitting evidence to a monitoring station. And a monitoring station that is able to provide the quickest way to help by communicating exact GPS coordinates. But it's just a clip, right? Wrong. This is safety. This is security. This is proof.
That's about as much of that as I can take. You guys are with me on that, right? This is the first sign. Hair clip by Rachel and Arthur Emanuel, now in partnership with Mace Brand, which is kind of interesting. It's like a funded Indiegogo that hasn't shipped yet, so we'll see if it actually, you know. But it's like an accelerometer and a Bluetooth module, just like that same device, the similar device you put on your mountain biking helmet when you go out mountain biking. We did an Adafruit teardown of that one. This commercial makes me really uncomfortable. Did it make you guys uncomfortable? Because it uses fear in its marketing, right? And the idea that, like a violent assault could happen anytime, buy our shit. I think that's a little misguided. But the idea that you don't need to know how it works, don't worry, the sensor's only activated with impacts that cause injury. Well, what is that? Like, a coder has to write that code, right? And coders make mistakes. And I don't know, but it's a very interesting example of the way we really want wearable tech to make us feel safe. And I would argue that we need to fundamentally understand that technology a little more, and that this is tough. That product is tough. I know when I'm shopping for hair clips, what I'm thinking about is documenting my violent assaults. But I think that it is easier to creatively misuse something that's popular and out there, right? Because there's more people with their hands on it, more people trying to use it for different purposes. This also has sound, but it's just Japanese song. This is a Japanese toy company called Takara Tomy Arts made this product called Lumi Deco Nail, and it's an RFID or NFC tag or chip in and an LED in a nail sticker. And you can buy these in Japan now. I'm trying to find a place to order them online. I can't yet, but it's just fun for Japanese schoolgirls or whoever else wants to wear it. But like this commercial is presenting it as like isn't it so fun? Oh, sorry, isn't it so fun to have your nails light up when you use your transit pass or when you're on the phone or when you're like using an RFID door access card? Isn't that so cool? And I love that, because the more cool it is, the more like outwardly cool people think this kind of stuff is, the more like fun stuff will happen in the future using this kind of technology. I think that if you replace it with an infrared LED, you could write an app that, like, when you go like this and flash it, it turns off the TVs, right? They have TV vegans on the brain all the time. I would like to do that. I put an RFID tag in my nail polish just to unlock my phone. Pretty fun. But my point is, it's easier to creatively misuse something that's popular. So I hope this becomes more popular. And this is the reason, right? I think that it's important for technology to be presented in a more fashionable context so that it appeals to a broader audience. This is a Raspberry Pi heads-up display, and this is Diane von Furstenberg wearing her Google Glass with her custom Diane von Furstenberg sunglasses. There's room for both of these things. And I think we need more designers to present technology in a way that makes you want to wear it to reflect your personal style. There's infinite personal style, so that means there need to be infinite wearable technologies to appeal to all of those styles. Because instead of a device you hold in your hand, wearable tech really, when you put something on your body, it says something about how you want to be seen in the world. So I think we're going to see stuff get less visible or more fashionable. So, like, we could have Google Glass. We could have, like, the Google Glass contact lens for firefighters who need their hands free. And I hope we have more fashionable representations of things that make you really want to put them on your body. So, I mean, I think that disruptive wearable tech has the potential to transform crime, give us, you know, make us feel like we're real life superheroes, and make our sensors work for us. And when stuff becomes, you can tell something has critical cultural impact when there starts to be anti-it. Right, so this is just the glass hole script that kicks your that you can put on your like a Raspberry Pi or BeagleBone to on your network to detect and kick Google Glass from a Wi-Fi network. So if you had a store and you didn't want people to be sharing videos from your store, you could put this on your network and kick them off. So there's like wearable anti-tech and there's anti-wearable tech. But I really want to encourage you guys to please creatively misuse this technology. This stuff kind of sucks. And I think that it makes us, like, worship data, right? And data worship is, it's okay. Like, yeah, we have all these sensors. We can be tracking our heart rate and our steps constantly. But then we're kind of told how to feel about that data by the company that made the thing, right? Nike makes the app, and it tells you, or Fitbit says, you met your goal today, according to our sensors. And it's just a little weird to have this, like, blind trust for these, like, let someone tell you how to feel about the data about your body, and then they're probably collecting it, you don't know, and using it for who knows what. So I think it's really important to creatively misuse technology that's out there now so that we can, like, break those molds and all that fun stuff. Snowden did just say, I wrote it down when he said it, that technology enables dissent, and wearables are a great way to show everybody else what that means, because you wear them out on your person, and it's expression of your beliefs. I will close with this with no comment. Thank you very much. If you'd like to contact me, I'm here. I have a live show on YouTube every week talking about wearable electronics. You can ask me questions. If we have time now, I'm checking my clock. If we have time now, I think the next one's supposed to start at 5. I'd like to take a couple questions if there are any in the audience. There's a crowd mic in the middle.
Is to let you know when your RFID is being read without your consent. I think it's a great detector. For example, if you've got Easy Pass in New York, if you saw Puking Monkeys Talk, it's being read for a lot of different reasons that do not have anything to do with the terms of service. And this would silently let you know that.
That's a great point. That's another reason I really want to order them online right now.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Why should we, as people who build technology, allow making something fashionable be make it look like a 20th century non-technological piece of apparel? Why not create a new aesthetic where we're proud to show off the fact that we're wearing technology?
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is you don't have to make it look like that to be fashionable. We have to make our technology fashionable and palatable to a broader audience by making it express different types of personal style, not just Diane von Furstenberg or Raspberry Pi guy, but all the way in between. So I know that there's several people out here who are helping to make that happen. I'm trying.
Could I put a finer point on it? Sorry for asking two questions. To what extent is fashion created by precedent of what people are wearing now, and to what extent is it created by the actions of advertisers and the media and the guys who actually do the design?
If fashion is highly influenced by advertising. It's true, but whatever you're wearing right now is already out of style. So, like, fashion is always overturning. There's interesting parallels between intellectual property of open source hardware and fashion, right? Because they don't have copyright on fashion design. So as soon as they release something, it's already been knocked off and in department stores. So they need to push for the new aesthetic. So I would encourage you. You're already doing it, man. Pushing the new aesthetic and helping make that. I mean, I'm just talking about reaching a wider audience. I don't mean to say that suggest that you have to comply, but it's interesting to see fashion designers, fashion companies become tech companies, right?
Hello, I like all your videos online. Aside from fashion, what do you think is required to accelerate the adoption of wearable technologies?
I think my job at Adafruit is I'm doing that, right? I'm trying really hard to make, like, teenagers want to learn how to program because they want their prom dress to light up when they dance. I think that's really important. Education and tutorials about technology and showing, because people need to be inspired, and so in making projects that inspire a new group of people who might not have been exposed to the idea that they can create their own technology. Specifically, I focus, I don't know, I like the teenage girls because I was one.
Thank you.
Hey, great talk. So in healthcare, with some of these newer emerging, like, wearable healthcare devices that consumers are buying, things like, not just like activity monitors, but even some of these glucose monitors and things like that, what do you think that does for, like, the social contract between care providers and patients now? Like, where's that social contract going to start changing?
What do you mean by social contract? Like it is, that the doctor's telling you it's okay to wear this thing all the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that's going to be prescription-based. I mean, it's going to be something that's consumer.
Yeah, I think that is cool. And insulin pumps are becoming... I had a student one time who was diabetic and had an insulin pump, and she wanted to make, like, fashion accessories for the insulin pump, which would crafty ones, like there's big fabric flowers and stuff, that sort of, like, made her feel good about and fashionable about her medically prescribed device. But medicine's hard. It's hard to get devices approved for patient use, and so I think it takes, things go a lot slower in the medical world when you're talking about new advancements in technology and making things more, like, body-friendly or like... You know, because if you're prescribed that device, then you're not choosing to wear it as part of your personal expression. You need it to live. I think we're going to see more, like, you know, cooler options. I hate to say it, but, like, more color options is the way it's going right now. And we'll see DIYers fashionably incorporate them into their, like, the more people who are wearing devices, the more fashionable they become.
So, like, with Apple and their newest health kit API that they're adding to some of their devices and their forthcoming smartwatch, do you think that there's going to be a lot of, rather than just the industry driving it, there's going to be a lot of consumers really driving to push this stuff into each other's pockets?
Sure, and it's hard in medicine, like, when patients ask, hey, give me this in a more girly color, like, that's not going to happen, but for companies like Apple, that definitely, yeah, consumer push will definitely have some kind of impact, but it's hard in medicine.
Thank you.
So you spoke about NFC and RFID, and I chipped myself a while ago, so I was wondering if you could just talk about the intersection of sort of wearable and how you think that might interplay with that.
How wearables might interplay with what? With, like, implants?
Yeah.
Well, like, for you, I think it's interesting, too, because, like, Mikey Sklar, like, chipped himself many years ago and had a video, famous video online of the home surgery where he did it. And then many, many years later, the video where I put the RFID tag in my nail polish is popular, and you haven't seen, like, I've seen other people do it before, but it's, like, it wasn't as popular. And I think it's because, like, technology is a male-dominated field, right? And so, and you guys don't wear nail polish that much. So I think that, like, that touches on my point of wearable tech going invisible or more fashionable, right? Like, either it's completely hidden inside your nail polish or inside your hand, or it's you wear it as an overt expression of yourself. I put mine in clear nail polish because I like the way it looked.
All right, thanks.
That's time, guys. Sorry. I'll be around for a few minutes if you want to come chat. Thank you so much. Sure. Just give me your card. Or take my card and send me an email.